From the KTOO newsroom, I'm Rasha McChesney with this news. The University of Alaska has sent layoff notices to 48 Human Resources Department employees as it reorganizes and consolidates its statewide HR system. The affected staff have first opportunity to apply for new positions within a restructured HR department, said UA spokesperson Roberta Graham. She says it will be slightly smaller.
We'll be going from 7 current directors to 5. And there will be efficiencies realized through the new services that are offered, some of which will be automated. So there's cost efficiencies to be had and some downsizing as well.
Graham says, unlike under the current structure, most HR jobs will not be location specific.
So you might be in Fairbanks or you might be in Anchorage, and the way the services are rendered, it won't matter where you live.
An online summary of the reorganization says it will result in, quote, single human resource organization with a unified presence on all campuses, end quote. Graham says while it will save money, the change is more focused on improving HR services, which have suffered due to past years' budget cuts.
The number of HR professionals has decreased, and it meant just a different kind of workload in areas that people might not have been as proficient in. So this realigns areas that people will find their talents and their skill sets really match.
Graham says the number and descriptions of positions are expected to be released Monday, noting that things could change depending on state funding for the university. UA plans to complete internal hiring by the end of June, after which any unfilled HR positions will go to recruitment. And 8 conservation groups filed a lawsuit against the U.S. Forest Service in federal district court on Thursday over the controversial sale of thousands of acres of trees on Prince of Wales Island. In March, the Forest Service signed off on the final environmental review for what could be the largest logging operation in more than a decade in a national forest. But the agency has maintained the project is intended for more than just timber, saying it will fulfill a variety of objectives, like stream restorations and the construction of new hiking trails and public use cabins. The plaintiffs say that the Forest Service hasn't provided a detailed map of the areas that could be logged and therefore can't adequately assess the environmental impact of the project for the public to weigh in. Tom Waldo, an attorney at Earth Justice, says the project shouldn't be allowed to move forward.
This is a brazen attempt by the Forest Service to rewrite the rules for timber sales. And it comes at the expense of a vast amount of habitat on Prince of Wales Island that's important for wildlife and for people and communities.
Historically, large-scale industrial logging has taken place on the island. It's where Alaska's last mid-sized sawmill resides. The Forest Service is expected to offer a timber sale in the area this summer. And one of the lessons learned from the 1989 Exxon Valdez oil spill is that the response has to begin immediately. Time is short if there's any hope of limiting the damage. In 1990, Congress imposed a per-barrel tax to pay for the oil spill liability trust fund so that the response to a spill can start even before the company at fault is held to account. But at the end of last year, Congress allowed that law to expire. Mac O'Hagerty of Homer was among a group of Alaskans in Washington, D.C. recently to ask lawmakers to renew it.
30 years ago, it was a long time ago. A lot of people are moving on, and we need to remember what happened.
Hagerty is a member of the Prince William Sound Regional Citizens Advisory Council. He was a commercial fisherman when the Valdez ran aground, and he worked on the spill cleanup in the Sound and on the outer Kenai Peninsula.
I think we're still suffering some of the effects from the Exxon Valdez spill. What we want to do is prevent spills. That's the main thing.
Hagerty likes a bill Senator Dan Sullivan sponsored, the Spill Response and Prevention Surety Act. It would permanently restore the oil spill fund and keep the 9 cents per barrel tax. But Sullivan's bill would cap the fund at $7 billion. Once the fund reaches that level, the tax would be suspended until the value drops again. Hagerty says the ceiling is important.
The fund is there just to get the cleanup started as soon as possible. So we don't need a huge amount of money, and any time you have a huge amount of money in the sitting around, people want to use it for other purposes.
The bill would also provide $25 million in annual grants to states for spill prevention. Haggerty says that prevention is crucial. It's one of the hard lessons of the 1989 spill.
You have herring and bidarkies and clams and a lot of the subsistence foods from Prince William Sound around the villages that are still not there.
Senator Lisa Murkowski is a co-sponsor of Sullivan's bill, which has not yet advanced to a committee hearing. And the statistics tracking the number of Native women who have disappeared in the U.S. are tough. And Alaska, with its small population, has the fourth largest number of Native women who have disappeared. Anchorage has the third highest of all the cities surveyed in a report from the Urban Indian Health Institute based in Seattle. Saturday, a group gathered at the Alaska Native Heritage Center in Anchorage to begin an effort to heal. KYUK's Joanna Urich attended the gathering, which used drums, song, dance, counseling, prayers, smudge, and promises to go forward and fight for policy changes and better public safety to protect Native women.
This drum right here, this name of this drum is Uncle Ray Smith drum. We named it after the elder up here.
The drum was the largest, accommodating many drummers, but it was not the only one there. There were traditional handheld drums from Native cultures all over the state, along with dancers and singers. At one point, the drummers all joined forces surrounding the group to form a drum heartbeat that turned the entire building into a throbbing instrument. The gathering was organized by several Native nonprofits. The center of it was a list, 5 pages long, with 191 names and growing. It is nowhere near complete.
I was just talking to my adoptive mom a couple of months ago.
That's Polly Andrews, one of the organizers of the event. She found another name for the list.
She said, Appa's sister came here in the 1950s. For either hospital appointment or something like that. She had come from the village of Tuluksak. Her name was Fani Wise, and no one ever heard from her again.
As we speak, there's a search crew in Chivac that is searching for Sarah Nicholas. The crisis of missing and murdered Indigenous women has been ongoing since colonization. These girls and these women are more than just a statistic. So, Aussie, if you could start us off by singing a prayer song, and then these ladies will go ahead and take turns reading the names of those that we've lost and those who have gone missing. No pictures and no video during this time. Go ahead.
The women read names of sisters, aunts, grandmothers, daughters, friends, neighbors. Some cried as they read. There was a healer there wiping away the pain and taking it into herself. She in turn was consoled and the pain wiped from her body. The list included several Jane Does, women whom authorities could not name, including a 14-year-old Jane Doe, a 13-year-old, and a 7-year-old. Native girls who were not yet women when they died without their names. For some cultures, the name holds the soul.
It drives my wife nuts. It drives her crazy. If I go to a grocery store, I'm so bad that I will not stand with my back towards the aisle where someone can walk behind me.
Anchorage Police Officer Gabriel Brown coached those in the gathering on how to avoid becoming another name on the list of missing. He has spent his entire career in Anchorage.
It is common to have one a day, one every other day.
Native women.
Yes. The situation surrounding it is just staggering to even think about.
Officer Brown says most reported missing people are found, but there are many unsolved open cases. All those attending Saturday's gathering say protecting Native women requires a multifaceted approach. Everything from better data for tracking the problem to fundamental cultural changes and better social services, education, and improved public safety in both rural Alaska and the cities. For KYUK, I'm Johanna Urich.
State agencies, cities, the University of Alaska, and school districts could not bar individuals from wearing tribal regalia or carrying objects of traditional cultural significance at public events under a bill introduced in the Alaska House. The bill is sponsored by Representative Tiffany Zolkowski, a Bethel Democrat. The measure, introduced Monday, comes after school district administrators in Anchorage approved changes to allow graduates there to wear traditional tribal regalia and objects of cultural significance at graduation ceremonies. That's the latest from the KTOO newsroom. I'm Rasha McChesney.